This RhinoCast is brought to you by RhinoHandmade.com.
Run, yeah, pretty mama, sit down on your daddy's knee. I want to tell everybody how you been.
Big Joe Turner singing there, Joe Newman featured on the trumpet, Lawrence Brown on trombone, Pete Brown on the alto sax, the great Frank West featured on tenor, Pete Johnson, Freddie Green, that's piano, guitar, Walter Page on the bass, and Cliff Lehman on the drums. Recorded in New York, March 1956, Nessie Ertegun and Jerry Wexler, originally from the bass of the blues. Joe Turner sings Kansas City Jazz. From this magnificent set, homage à Nessie, it is definitely a homage to the great Atlantic producer, the brother of Ahmet Ertegun Nessie. Joining me in studio, this is kind of part two, because we're just starting to move into volume two. There's five discs total, folks. It is absolutely one of these things that I can't, words can't even express how beautiful the book is, the liner notes featuring David's dad, Joel. It's in sort of a thematic order. There's five different volumes, five different CDs, and it's just something that you must see, feel, and hear to appreciate. And it is available. It's limited. Only 3,000 were made, and it's been out for about a month now. So if you're interested, you want to go to rhinohandmade.com.
That's right, rhinohandmade.com, or you can go to rhino.com and find it as well. But rhinohandmade.com is the site where we sell all of our limited edition products. The website, of course, we have pictures where you can see it, but it's an extraordinarily beautiful package. And there are 19 or 20 photographs that we include from Lee Friedlander, who's not just one of jazz's greatest photographers. He's one of America's greatest photographers. He's in the Smithsonian. This is a legendary photographer, and it just complements the package on photo paper, and it adds to what makes this special and collectible. And the liner notes really tell the story from a lot of people's perspective. Everyone from jazz greats like Nat Hentoff and Ira Gittler, jazz writers, that are like that. But even people like Dr. John, who contributes. And it's an extraordinary journey through the history of this great label.
And that's the voice of David Dorn, who is a music producer in his own right. He's with Rhino Records. And also joining us in studio is the great, the maestro, Boncho Sanchez. I tried to tell Boncho about this box set and how excited I was, and he's, just said, I'll be there. I'm going to come down. We're going to talk about this set, and David's going to be on with us just for about another 15 minutes, and then Boncho and I will take out the hour together. But I wanted to talk about kind of the beginning of your dad, Joel Dorn's relationship with Nessie Ertegun and how it began. Because before Joel started producing recordings, he had been writing to Nessie from the age of 14.
Yeah.
So why was he in correspondence with Ertegun?
Well, if you go back to the 50s, it's not really like it is today, where there are probably millions of kids who want to be involved in the music business in one way or another. And back in the 50s, that just wasn't the case. You really had to passionately want to work in that business. And my father heard Ray Charles on the radio when he was a kid, and sometime in the mid-50s, and it flipped him out. It completely changed his life. And from that moment on, he wanted to work at Atlantic Records. That was the place he wanted to be. He knew he wanted to work in music, and he wanted to work at Atlantic in particular. I think it just was a very rare thing. I don't know what the analogy would be today, but for a kid in the 50s to say, I want to be a record producer, I don't know, is that like saying I want to be a neurosurgeon when you're 14 years old? I don't know. It was a very rare thing to want to do then. Nowadays, it isn't. He started writing letters to Nessie, and Nessie responded to him, and My father was persistent, to say the least, and he worked his way into being a DJ at Temple University and through WHAT-FM in Philadelphia, where we grew up, and eventually that landed him a job as a record producer at Atlantic when he was in his 20s, and I think his first project was Hubert Laws, and basically Nesawi said, I'm going to give you no money. He tells the story in the liner notes, but he basically says, to paraphrase, I'm going to give you almost no money to make a recording, and if you can make a recording and do something with it and be successful in one way or another, then maybe you have a career here. And he was able to do that. And it turned into a lifelong relationship between the two. And, you know, I think it's just an unusual story. You know, there weren't that many kids back in the 50s that wanted to be a record producer. So
it's a wonderful story. And also there is a replica of the letter in the book that you can read, and it's actually Nesawi's response to your dad, October 10th of 1958, and before your dad dropped off the bloom from Dorn. And it's really wonderful to see how the relationship started and was fostered, and that Nesawi obviously was a nice, you know, patient guy, that he would correspond with this little kid, you know, with his little kind of crazy dreams.
Sure.
And that they actually, you know, became friends, and that's why we hired him. And it's actually a story that I think should be a movie.
It's an interesting one. Certainly Nesawi's life should be a movie. He was such a cultured and interesting person, way beyond just the music. I mean, just led a very fascinating life, along with Ahmet growing up, you know, the sons of the Turkish ambassador to the U.S. And, you know, you just sort of wonder, how did they get into the music business? It's very unlikely, you know, and then my father's relationship with him was sort of almost as unlikely. And then you look at the stable of producers that worked at Atlantic. I'm sure it's arguable, but the greatest in-house production staff in music history was at Atlantic. You had people like Tom Dowd and Arif Mardin and Nesawi and Ahmet and Jerry Wexler and my father being one of them as well. And the recordings that those people are known to have put together, it's just the who's who of some of the greatest music ever recorded.
It's very interesting, and I think it's a great thing that the way the history goes and the way it happened, they actually recorded mostly black music, and they did it right. You know, they did great recordings. These came out to be classic, great-sounding recordings. And for a young guy like me growing up in the 50s and the 60s, I was the youngest of 11 kids. So my older brothers and sisters, they were into all this stuff, of course, before me. And music has no color, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm just so glad that they recognized at that time how hip and how great the black music was at that time, because not many people were really recording it correctly and putting it out there. And so all this stuff is so important in our history.
Let's take a listen to Laverne Baker from 1958 with Empty Bed Blues.
You've just listened to a special Rhino Handmade podcast. Visit rhinohandmade.com for a special selection of highly collectible music you won't find anywhere else.